Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
I'm going to be all right. Had a teensy-weensy breakdown, but now I'm cured. Understanding, it's wonderful. It isn't the airplane at all. Overtension and over-anxiety due to underconfidence.
Your seatbelt, sir.
What?
Look! Look, he's crawling on... I'm... sorry. Must have been the...
bomb? What is it?
Oh, it's nothing, Mrs. Wilson. Can I get you anything?
A glass of water.
What's going on?
He's pulling up one of the cowling planes.
He?
Didn't my wife... There's a man out there.
Also, keep your voice down.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't...
I don't know what's going on here.
Will you look?
Mr. Wilson, I'm warning you.
Will you please look in the name of...
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Sorry, I had to get the Halloween reference in. I put six shots in him. He's not human.
Oh, God. Hi, everybody. We're here with Crazy Robert.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. And I'm here with my wonderful co-hosts, Robert, Bobby, Dave. And we have our great, great guests here. We have Felix from New Jersey. And we have Rick Wall. And we have Louie. And we have guest number 8. And we are going to have a great time today. We're going to be talking about one of the all-time classic episodes, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet.
Lynn, we got a Twilight Zone connection. The theme from Gremlins that I played in the opening there, that was from Gremlins 2, the ending credits. That music was done by Jerry Goldsmith.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, that is a nice part. Yeah, I didn't know that. Well, on this rainy Saturday afternoon, and it is raining where just about everybody is today, this is kind of a nice episode to do because, as far as I can remember, it was raining during the, you know, when he was on the plane and he was looking out the window. Wasn't it raining? Wasn't it a storm?
What a coincidence. Wow.
What a coincidence. It was. Yes, indeed. So this is just so the atmosphere.
It was a dark and rainy day. Night.
Dark and rainy night, yeah.
A shot rang out. Yeah, all that.
In the dark, yes. Mm. Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Portrait of a frightened man. Mr. Robert Wilson, 37, husband, father, and salesman on sick leave. Mr. Wilson has just been discharged from a sanitarium, where he spent the last 6 months recovering from a nervous breakdown, the onset of which took place on an evening not dissimilar to this one, on an airliner very much like the one in which Mr. Wilson is about to be flown home. The difference being that on that evening, half a year ago, Mr. Wilson's flight was terminated by the onslaught of his mental breakdown. Tonight, he's traveling all the way to his appointed destination, which, contrary to Mr. Wilson's plan, happens to be in the darkest corner of the Twilight Zone.
That's a great, great, great opening narration. I love that opening narration. It's just good. It's just so Rod. Just so Rod. You know, he pretty much tells you everything. Tells you almost the whole story there, other than what happens. I mean, he's a salesman. He's on an airplane. And, of course, he had a nervous breakdown on an airplane 6 months previous to that. And he's going home now, and he's flying home on an airplane. And he's with his wife.
He don't know when he'll be back again. Is that right, Lynn?
Yes, that's right. Leaving on a jet plane, yes.
I don't blame him for having a nervous breakdown, though. I wouldn't fly on one of those crates back then either.
Yeah. Oh, my God, especially on a dark and rainy evening. That's right. I mean, he's just, and his wife was very patronizing. But, of course, you know, she didn't know. She didn't know whether he was ready to fly or not. I mean, he has a nervous breakdown on the plane, and then he's getting ready to fly home again on a plane. But, you know, he's nervous. You can tell he's nervous. But then suddenly, you know, he looks out the window, and there's a gremlin in a fuzzy pajama suit. And he's tinkering with the wiring.
And it was said after midnight. That was very naughty of people to people after midnight. That's what happens. They get on airplane wings and tear things up.
That's right. And he's tinkering with the wiring. And he tries to warn the crew. And he tries to tell his wife. And, of course, every time one of them looks out the window, that crazy gremlin, he just jumps away. A sneaky little guy. And eventually he grows desperate. Sees a police officer is sleeping, grabs his gun, and opens the window marked auxiliary exit, and he tries to shoot the gremlin. And, of course, he does succeed. He shoots him, but everybody believes he's gone totally insane. He's whisked away in a straitjacket after the plane lands, and he tells his wife that only he knows that everything's going to be okay. He says only he knows what happened up there. And, of course, Rod Serling, he informs the viewers that Bob's conviction won't be a secret for long, because the final shot reveals why the gremlin has left evidence of Bob's story in the form of the damaged wing. So, after all this terrible season 4 episodes, we finally get to another classic, and it's one of the series' absolute best offerings. I think everyone can pretty much agree with that, and also one of the most memorable, and it's actually one of the series' and the season's best offerings. But, you know, It's also an episode that's been spoofed on numerous, numerous television shows.
Definitely.
Such as The Simpsons. Yeah, The Simpsons, Saturday Night Live. And it was remade for the 1983 movie with John Lithgow in the starring role. And I would even venture to say that William Shatner is as well known for this role as he is for Captain Kirk. You know, in the role of Bob Wilson, he plays a man on the brink of a second nervous breakdown. You know, it's just a shame that he just came from the sanitarium and he's already on the plane. And you would think that, you know, go on a train, somebody drive you. You know, I don't know where he had to go. I mean, maybe it was across the country, but, you know, wherever this happened, and you know, some of there weren't sanitariums in the place where this, I don't know, that just seems kind of weird that he's back on a plane again. But, no, he was wonderful.
I was just trying to overcome my fear of flying.
He's fine. He'll be all right. I'm just fine. You think I'm crazy, don't you? You think I'm nuts. I thought he was absolutely wonderful.
Oh, sorry. Wrong series.
Fuck.
Needed alcohol.
Ah! Okay. <I'm nuts. laughs> Oh, my God. I'm a man, not a gremlin. But anyway, he's absolutely wonderful. You know, he's about to lose it, you know, and he does it very well. I thought he was great in the role. You know, he sees this gremlin in sheepskin pajamas, and that suit is, you know, and he's on the plane, you know, the wing of the plane, and, you know, his facial expressions, his mannerisms could not have been more perfect. And William Shatner was just terrific in this. And, you know, I've always considered him an actor who was over the top, overacted, and, you know, some people agree with that, some people don't, but, you know, in this, it was really, you know, it was good that he was over the top in this. And, you know, I always wondered, and I don't know, I guess other people too, you know, they never said what caused his first nervous breakdown on the plane. I mean, did he see gremlins then too? Was he just a white-knuckle flyer who freaked out? I mean, we never find out. I mean, maybe he's taken a plane home from the sanitarium. As I said, it was a little too much too soon.
I told you, I would go nuts on a crate like they had back then too. Give me a 747 or something like that. Over those
that was a jumpy
actually,
plane, wasn't
it? Was that a DC-8?
Isn't it strange,
the heavier the aeroplane is, Rick, the safer you feel. Don't sound right, that.
Yeah, what keeps them up there, right? I don't know. I mean,
and my question, too, to you, Lynn, is, too, if you have a drop in cabin pressure like that, did they ever come up to air things supposed to drop down, or is that later on?
Well, it did. It did in the movie, but it didn't. Yeah, they're supposed to drop down immediately.
Well, it's a turboprop. It probably flew at a lower height. It's not flying at 50,000 feet now. It's flying at.
Oh, yeah,
it's still
20,
flying
now.
At 30, at 25, 25,000. Yeah, it would have decompressurized certainly, which is why he
but,
pulled
you know,
out.
When the window,
it was 20,000 feet. That's why it's called Terror at 20,000.
Clever. He's a clever man. Well done, Ray.
but when he blew out the or pulled out the window, when he pulled out the window, shouldn't that have made the things drop?
No,
I mean,
because it wasn't. It was. It's not that big a deal. There is no decompression that much.
Maybe it was just dictated by the budget for the episode. I mean, how much that would have cost? That was little thing.
Yeah, in the movie, they had a bigger budget for the movie, you know.
And did
they
pass
around
things?
The
I don't know. I think, wasn't that in later airplanes? I'm trying to think of movies at the time that had airplanes. The only one I can think of is Goldfinger. And I don't think anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you talk about budget. Talk about Ed Wood and Plan 9 from Outer Space. You'll love the cockpit in that movie.
But, you know, of course, Richard Matheson, he had to make this episode even more perfect with the storm, the terrible storm outside. And, you know, that's the perfect atmosphere for this. That's what I'm saying. This rainy day is great to be discussing this one. You know, and, of course, we all need an ugly gremlin in a silly suit on the wing of the plane. And, you know, we have all the ingredients for an awesome zone episode. So, and Bob's wife and the stewardess and eventually the pilot, you know, they're all trying to be understanding to the point of what are they doing, being very patronizing. And who can blame him? After all, he did just come from a nut house, you know? You also have to wonder how competent the law enforcement guy was, the Bob so easily stole his gun. I mean, I always shake my head at that. It's like, oh, yeah, I'll just leave a gun hanging out here. Anybody, once I fall asleep, if you wanted, you could grab it, you know?
I thought
he had more than one bullet.
Acting.
Yeah.
What's that?
No, I thought you were shaking your head at the acting, because that's probably the one part of
No, it's just the fact that it was so easy to get his gun.
No,
you know?
But, you know, William Shatner, oops, I dropped my napkin, then he just goes down there.
That's right. That's
it just
right.
Seems a little, like, a little, like, I remember thinking, just thinking,
yeah,
it, but overdone.
It should have been whistling to make it even more offensive.
Just crawl along the floor, grab the gun, you know, and you know, he just so easily took it. But what other alternative could there be? You know, none really. And my one and only complaint about this episode has always been the same, and it always will be the same. The gremlin, yeah, he had a hideous face, but the rest of the getup was ridiculous. I mean, come on, he looked like an Eskimo in a sheepskin snowsuit or head-to-toe sheep pajamas. I mean, if it weren't for his freaky face, he almost looked cuddly. I mean, you just want to hug the guy.
At least he was warm when it was pouring the rain down in the studio. Okay.
Yeah, that was his rain suit. Right? He looked so warm and cuddly. I mean, I think they could have come up with something a little more nightmarish than the fuzz, but it doesn't take away from the brilliance of the episode. It's a classic in every sense of the word. And the 1980, but of course, now you got to admit, I'm sure everyone here has seen the Twilight Zone movie. The 1983 movie Gremlin was much scarier. Now that's the way the Gremlin should have looked. You know, he was scary, but of course they had more of a budget then. You know, but
yeah, the Gremlin
original
looked like a predator. If anybody ever see Predator
yeah.
in the dark, yeah.
I mean, he was frightening. But you know, the original will always be the best. You know, as far as I'm concerned, and Shatner was great. And Christine was good as Christine White, she was good as his wife, and she was at her wit's end, she didn't know what to do, but, you know, she loved him, and she was trying to be understanding, but she was also being patronizing. And she just wanted to take a nap. The poor woman, all she wanted to do was sleep, he kept waking her up. But, and by the way, she, in case you've forgotten, she, or don't remember, she also appeared in season 2's episode, The Prime Mover. She played Ace Larson's girlfriend. And as we all know, Shatner was in season 2's Nick of Time. He was a nervous wreck in that one, too. He's good at playing nervous wrecks. So that was an excellent story, excellent acting, silly gremlin suit, but that could
just
be
just like James Best playing hillbillies, and William Shatner could play his roles. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, James Best is about as tight cast as you can get, right? Even on Andy Griffith, everything, yeah. All right, Robert, so what do you think?
Well, very much enjoyed this, as I think a lot of people will agree, definitely a classic, definitely 5 out of 5 on this one. For Shatner's last appearance in the Twilight Zone, I think he did a wonderful job playing the unhinged airplane passenger. The whole thing is, what I agree with you, Lynn, is the monster. And we got to think during that era, you know, this was, what, 63? So I was probably like maybe 5 or 6 months old then or whatever when this one came out. But so, you know, you had to use what you had handy, and evidently that's what they had handy there. But, you know, the story and the direction, it just fitted this 2-minute episode. Definitely nothing longer than this. I mean, it's just a perfect time. I mean, it was very creepy. It was ominous. I mean, it had Twilight Zone features in this one. And, you know, what also makes it nice is we get a future director by the name of Richard Donner, who goes on Old Men, Superman, The Goonies, Scrooge, Lethal Weapon, and others as well. And also, you have a great writer like Matheson putting the script together. So, I mean, just everything came together with this one. And it's nice to have, you know, a bright point in this. Right now, we're reviewing season 5, and we're about 10 reviews ahead from our, we do on audio here. And like I said, this is one of the bright points of a season five. We got another Bright Point coming up very shortly as well. But the thing is, man, this wonderful, wonderful episode, and it's got a rewatch value that, you know, we all know what happens. We've seen it time after time. It's something you would watch when it comes out in the marathons on Sci-Fi, even though cut versions I'm not very happy about when they air them, just to stick the commercials in. But still, it's one that I wouldn't turn away from watching. And I know we're all going to be mentioning the movie with Scott playing that character. And if you ever watch the movie and this episode and watch it side by side, it's pretty much from the script, except for a few changes in the acting with Lithgow. Instead of using a gun to start with or to pull in the window, he uses the fire extinguisher and then uses the gun, just so they can add a little variance of difference in the movie itself. And the monster, yes, CGI, of course, 83, gotten a little bit better with that. But I think it's nostalgic with this episode as well, is why people love this, because, you know, Shatner giving, you know, his best, you know, for his final showing on the Twilight. One of the things that we talked about too is where William Shatner made an appearance on John's show, which was Third Rock from the Sun. And yeah. In that one, Shatner plays the big head, the alien, or the leader of the group that's there on Earth. And it's nice to where the writers of that show, they decided to do a little homage to the Twilight Zone episode. Now I'm going to play that clip.
Do you see him yet?
See who? No idea what kind of body he formed into.
Oh, this is so frustrating. He could be any of these people.
So his head will be smaller?
Yes, his head will be smaller.
What are you doing?
You can't be too careful.
I love you people. I love your answer. That was the slide. Is it so?
Look at this loser.
Hello? Is this any way to greet your supreme leader?
Welcome, all great and glorious leader, whose presence in which we, your humble and insignificant subordinates, are barely worthy of basking.
Right.
This is some body I picked
out. So how was your trip, sir?
Horrifying at first. I looked out the window and I saw something on the wing of the plane.
The same thing happened to me.
Wait a minute, calm me down. They gave me something called alcohol.
No.
Let's get on a flight to Jersey and get another round.
Oh, no, you don't have to, sir. That bar over there serves alcohol.
Hot diggity. I love this planet already.
That was the scene
that
from...
That was great. Yeah. I remember I saw that when it was first on. That was so great. The same thing
Shatner
happened to me.
And Lithgow must have had fun during the takes when they were doing that scene. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Unfortunately, one of the things we talk about actors and do they remember past roles. Some do. Some have real good memories. Others, they quite don't remember what they did way in the past or didn't really take notice of it. There's a little clip here where Shatner appeared at a fan fest August 4th, 2013, where he was asked about the Twilight Zone. So here's that clip.
Well, I wish I could tell you that it was memorable and everybody knew that the last, what it was done in the 60s, the last 50 years, and the ones I did are popular, so when they look at the Twilight Zone thing, you know, it's one of the more popular ones. And had I known, had you told me that it was going to last that long, I'd pay more attention. But it was just a simple half-hour show that I had worked with all those. The Vivian Matheson, George Clayton Johnson was a member of this Green Thumb group of writers, of which Richard Matheson was one. As you know, Richard Matheson just recently died. He wrote Nightmare. So I got to know him. And it was in that, and even then, they were young writers who hadn't done anything really particularly notable, although they were great, great writers, I'm sure, had not been recognized. So I, as a result, did not recognize them as being the great talent. I just saw some wonderful scripts and wonderful ideas, the two shows that they had asked me to do.
So in other words, he doesn't remember. But wait a minute, weren't the writers popular in books? Didn't they write books before going to the TV and writing scripts? Clayton and all them?
I just wonder how popular science fiction was back then, like in popular culture, as compared to just like fans of the fiction, fans of science fiction, fans of fantasy. I mean, I know Lord of the Rings was big.
You mean in the
60s?
Yeah,
I know Lord of the Rings hit it big, but that's about the only fantasy thing that I think went into the mainstream at the time.
Yeah.
Well, didn't you have Bradbury and them making their mark during that time, too?
Oh, yeah. But Richard Matheson's more known for his short stories, so... Because he did, like, Omega Man, and...
You had fans back then, but they were just, you know, a small group of them, and stuff like that. I had a friend who was a very famous inker by the name of Mike Esposito, who worked in the 40s and 50s and 60s and 80s and 90s and stuff like that for comic books. And he said, "Dad, nobody really wants this crap." And he was surprised in the 80s when the comic book convention
started.
When it started to take off. So that was basically what it was back then.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, some of the writers did write books. Not all of them. Some did.
Yeah, I think Matheson was mostly known for his short stories.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I give it a 5 out of 5. Pretty much that's all I got. I just wanted to throw those two clips out. I know that
that was one great
scene from Third Rock was well known, where they both got together, and I think that was Shatner's first appearance in the series.
Yeah, I love that scene. That was awesome.
Okay, Bobby, you're up to bat.
All right, thank you, Robert. Yes, obviously this is a classic episode. It's in my Twilight Zone top 5, maybe even in my top 3, though I have to think about that. And I've seen it twice in the past week, along with the important scenes from the movie version as well. And at the Internet Movie Database, it gets a 9.1 rating from the people who voted over there, and that's a rare atmosphere. Only Time Enough at Last and Eye of the Beholder get 9.1 ratings. So that's quite unusual. They usually don't go that high. It is a great episode. I never get tired of watching it, but quite frankly, it requires a lot of suspension of disbelief from the viewer if you're going to buy into it. Now, I don't have any problem with that because I just want to enjoy an episode. I don't want to pick it apart until I get to the show. But there are a lot of problems with it, a lot of things that don't make any sense from the very beginning to the very end. And it starts at the beginning because, as Rod Serling tells us, this man has been in a mental institution for 6 months because he had a nervous breakdown on a plane. And he apparently just got out and he's going home on a plane. Now, trust me, no psychiatrist would tell a man who's just getting over a mental breakdown to go home on a plane. It's simply unthinkable. It just would not happen. You need a lot of therapy after something like that. After you get out of the place, you're going to have to go see the psychiatrist, talk about it, deal with it, learn how to get over it. You don't just stick somebody back on a plane right away. You're just asking for trouble. Plus, they get on the plane, and they walk to the seats, and where do they sit? Conveniently enough for the writer, right by the emergency exit. And she even says to him, "You sure you want to sit here?" And he goes, "Yeah, that's fine. I'll sit here." Now, come on. As nervous as he is, he would never say that. He would surely say, "I don't know, let me sit back in the back somewhere." He's not going to sit there. But that's the kind of thing that's necessary to write the story, so I can't be too critical of it because I didn't write it, so obviously there are certain things you have to do. The other crazy part of the episode is there just happens to be a police officer on the plane who's got a gun, and he just happens to be asleep in his seat, and he just happens to have the gun sticking out in the aisle so that anybody can pick it up. You can just imagine how that would go down today with terrorism and everything. It's just ridiculous. So everything that needs to be there is conveniently there, but when you write a story, you put in what you need to put in, and that's the case here. So those kind of things are kind of bizarre. Also, the idea that only he could see this gremlin out on the wing is ridiculous because you've got a pilot and a co-pilot. Of course they would see it. Their only job up there is to fly the plane and take a look around and make sure they're not running into any other planes. So it's unthinkable that there would be something on the wing and they would not see it. Of course they would. So, again, that's another thing that doesn't make any sense. As far as the story itself is concerned, yes, it's a very terrifying story. And the best part of it, as far as I'm concerned, is when he opens the window and the monster has his face up against the window. And it's an interesting scene to me because as a viewer, you know it's coming. You can see it coming from a mile away. You know he's going to open that window at some point and it's going to be out there, but you don't expect that it's going to be pressed up against the window. That's what makes the difference. Had he opened up the window and just seen him on the wing, fooling with the engine like he did earlier, that would have been bad enough. But instead, this hideous thing is pushed up against the window, and that really, really does make that scene. I'm not that troubled by the fact that the person who is playing the gremlin is dressed in a ridiculous-looking pair of pajamas. That doesn't really bother me all that much. I really don't think so because, like I said, he's a hideous mask on, and that really is ugly enough to make it scary. So I kind of tend to overlook that. The first time you see it, you do kind of look at it and think it's kind of laughable to see anybody dressed like that. But you get over it after a while because there are other things that recommend it. So even though I very much like it, and yes, I give it a classic rating, there's no question about that. But the thing that I find most interesting about this episode comes at the very end. Because you've got this kind of tacked on happy ending at the end, except it's not going to be a happy ending. The plane lands, you know, much too easily, considering that the door is open, the window is open. The plane lands, everybody is safe. Oh, one other thing before I get there, it's already been mentioned by Robert and Lynn, and that is the fact that the mask did not drop down. I've never been on a plane, so I don't know when they drop down, but that's not the problem I have with that scene. It's that he opens the window to shoot the gremlin, and there's this terrible decompression, and he gets sucked out the window. Yet his wife and the flight attendant are able to come down the aisle and stand there and are not affected at all. That is preposterous. If he's getting sucked out of there, so are they. In the movie Airport, if anybody remembers it, in the critical scene, a man smuggled a bomb on the plane to get insurance for his wife, and he goes to the men's room and he sets off the bomb and it blows a hole in the plane. And the thing is a disaster. It's a mess. The mask dropped down, and things are flying all over the plane, and people are holding onto their seats. And
you're also flying twice as high as you are in this.
I understand that, but are you going to tell me, so because they're at 20,000 feet, he can open the window, and I can just stand there right next to him, and nothing will happen to me? Really?
Yes. Yes.
Well, they were right down the bottom end where the kitchen was.
Whatever. Anyway, all right. So I stand corrected on that part.
Go skydiving one day, Robert.
Yeah. The real problem I have with it is at the end, when he's in the stretcher, and he says, "Yes, I'm the only one who knows right now." And he looks up, and there's the engine that has been fooled with. That's all very well and good. So he gets carted off back to the insane asylum. But I think he's going to be there for a while again, because the fact that the people on the ground, the ground crew, is going to notice that something has happened to the engine, that doesn't mean they're going to buy his story that he saw a gremlin on the engine. So what? Lots of things can happen to a plane. That's not going to. I mean, who knows what happened? Who knows? Maybe it was defective. Maybe something hit the plane. A lot of things might have happened. I don't know. But just because, and even though they're going to turn around and say, "What's that guy on the plane? You know, he said he saw something out there. Maybe he really did." I think they'll look at it, but in the end, nobody's going to believe it because there's absolutely no proof that he saw a gremlin on the plane. There's no body of it, even though he shoots him. His body's not there. And so he still looks kind of crazy. And they're just, because of his background and his mental breakdown, they're going to say, well, you know what? He was already nervous coming on the plane. He saw something out the window. He saw that something was wrong with the engine, and he kind of hallucinated that somebody was fooling with it. So I think Bob's in a lot of trouble. I think he's going to still be looked at in a quite bizarre manner, regardless, when he tells that story. For him to just lay there and say, yeah, I'm sure everybody thinks I'm crazy now, but they'll find out I was telling the truth. No, not really. He was right about the engine going bad. That he was right. It's a good thing they landed. But the story that there was a gremlin out there fooling with it, come on now. People aren't going to automatically buy that. So,
Bobby?
Yes?
I wanted to ask you, that scene where the camera focuses in on the engine itself,
yeah.
Did that remember that John Wayne movie, The High and the Mighty, where at the end of the movie they all go and look at the engine?
I remember that. Yeah, I saw that when I was a little kid, yeah.
And all John Wayne does is just whistle and turns his head and walks away.
That's right.
At the end.
That's right. But it's one thing to just, well, because he's just commenting that we're lucky to be alive. You know, it's a close call, but we made it.
Well,
but that didn't involve
Dave also brought up a point. He said maybe, because he was shooting, maybe bullets hit the wing of the plane, and that could have caused damage.
Oh, sure. Well, we know that he did open the window and shoot, but we don't know what he was shooting at since nobody saw it.
Yeah.
So even though those things are like that, it doesn't affect the story. It just doesn't. I mean, I've seen it so many times now. God only knows how many times. I would just, you know, so when you see it this many times, you begin to look beyond the story and into the things that don't make any sense. Now, the final point I want to make is about in comparison to the movie version. Yes, the movie version is very good, and had there never been a Twilight Zone version, a series version, I probably would have liked it very much. But I prefer the one from the Twilight Zone because it's more understated. The one thing I don't like about the movie version is that it's too overdone. The camera goes in and out rapidly, up on showing him falling in the aisle and all. It's a little overdone. I realize it's many years later, so people expect that. The monster is, of course, much scarier because you got special effects now and you got a budget to do it. It's not bad, but if I had to watch one of them, I would do the series one because I think it's a little more understated. The whole point of the episode is to make you feel nervous. What would you do if you saw something out there that was going to endanger everybody and you couldn't convince anybody? In the movie version, he just sees it, and this horrible monster is at the window, and it's really too late to do anything. So I prefer the series version. And I think you can thank not only William Shatner for an understated performance, which, like Lynn pointed out, he's not exactly known for. And I think it was understood, stated. He did go crazy, but it could have been even worse. But it was directed by Richard Donner, who's, as Robert mentioned, is a famous film director. And I looked at IMDb, and I see Richard Donner did quite a few episodes in season 5. But I didn't particularly like most of them. I only liked this one. So there you go.
So what, your ratings of 5,
oh,
right?
No, well, my ratings of 5, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. And Felix is rating it a 4.5, but he's only taking the half a point off because of the monster, you know, looking like a teddy bear.
Oh, in the funny suit. Oh, yeah, I understand.
Yeah. So some people gave deductive points for that. He also said you could always say a UFO zapped the engine because that sounds just as crazy as the jet gremlins on it. Yeah, that's a good one, Felix, really.
This is
okay,
very ironic,
well,
that we're doing this episode today with all the business about the airplane missing.
Yeah,
they all look into this.
Yes,
I heard all kinds of goofy thoughts on what it could be, but nobody's come up with this.
Yeah, exactly. The gremlin.
Yeah. Maybe it was that. How do we really know?
Okay, well, I'm turning this over to Rick now.
Okay. First of all, usual flight altitude for sky jumping or parachute jumping is 20,000 feet because you do not need a compressed cabin. Now,
you don't need oxygen.
Right. Now, as for the psychologists or psychiatrists telling him to go back on the plane, yes, I am deathly afraid of heights myself. I went to a psychologist who was a behaviorist. You know what he made me do? Climb ladders for the hour.
Yeah, they'll do that. They'll do that. They'll make you confront your fear. Confront your fear,
yep. And that's what his character says at the beginning. I have to fight my fear, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, now, I kind of sort of disagree with the acting. I think he did go a little over the top. Like I told them, Dave last week, you know, that's about the only thing that's holding me back from giving it a 5 is, you know, I watched it recently, and I don't know why. I just find, at least being older now than I was when I first saw it, Shatner's kind of great, the way he's acting in it kind of grates on me now. I don't know why. Maybe it's just me, but I'm still giving it a 4 or 5. But
Rick, how could you say such a thing like that?
Because he's just he's overacting with himself as usual.
Get your phasers out.
Oh, wait a minute. Did you say you're giving a 4.5 or a 4?
4.5.
Which is still classic. That's still good.
Stephanie give it? What's Stephanie give it?
I don't think she's ever seen it.
You got to let that be. You're depriving Daphne of the Twilight Zone.
And also, another thing, he's the only one who sees it. Let's see, how many movies are there where people see something that other people don't? What's the one with Jimmy Stewart and the rabbit?
Harvey.
Harvey,
our
yes.
Friend Harvey. Called Harvey here. Harvey.
all kinds of movies. Oh, and by the way, anybody remember a certain building getting flown into by a B-29 bomber in the 30s, I believe it was, or 40s? You know what it was caused by? Gremlins. That is on the official. That is on the official paperwork.
Yeah, they couldn't say unknown origins. They had to be lazy, Rick, and say grim.
But Rick,
don't you think it's strange, though, Rick, that he's looking out the window right now? It looked like the plane was fairly full, don't you think? The plane was full. He's looking out the window. He sees a gremlin. Is he the only person on the plane looking out the window? That's what gets me. No one on that plane looked out the window except
maybe
him.
Maybe because he was quote unquote crazy that he was the only one who could see it.
Exactly, because I can't believe that not one other person turned their head and looked out the window.
Wasn't
while
that
nighttime? Gremlin was on the wing.
It was a nighttime flight. It was a nighttime flight. Everybody was sleeping. He decided to stay up and look out his window. Oh,
well,
there you go.
Yeah.
Some people were away. Some people were still awake.
The MASH episode where Klinger was sick and he could see the dead spirit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, he was hallucinating. Yeah. That was a good episode. It just seems strange that no one else, other people had to be looking out the window. Okay, so you're giving it a 4.5 rating, Rick?
Yes.
Okay. Well, do you leave enough now?
Unfortunately, the big black, four-legged, tailed master of mine is telling me, go out.
Daphne's ready to take some sightseeing and enjoy the trees, Rick.
Yep.
Well, give her a kiss for me.
I will.
All right. Well, you'll be here in 2 weeks. You'll be here 2 weeks.
As far as I know, I should be unless something comes up.
All right.
And Dave, I'll see you tomorrow.
Good. Great. That's fantastic.
All right.
Good night,
bye,
everybody.
Rick.
Thanks
see
for coming
2 weeks.
By. Okay. All right, Dave.
Oh, Dave, before you start, I want to say excellent episode on the Coldham Collective last week. where you were discussing the scariest films and stuff, or TV shows. I just want to say I really compliment you on your...
Oh, was that the episode?
And the previous one, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks very much indeed for that. Let me put a link into the room, the list we were talking about.
Oh, by the way, Dave, the title of the one you were trying to remember last week was It's a Good Life.
Yeah, I did. Somebody else prompted me on that, yeah.
Okay. It's a good life. What's
Twilight there? What it was now, the interest has been piqued. It was on our Cultum Collective Sunday just gone, we were doing top 25 scariest science fiction and fantasy TV episodes of all time.
I wish now, I'd known that. I would like to have seen that, heard that.
But there were three out of the 25. Number 24 was the Twilight Zone to Serve Man. At 16 was this particular episode of The Twilight Zone, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. And I think there was one other, but we were talking about, yes, the other one, which we were a bit surprised it was placed so high, was at number 6, Twilight Zone Living Doll. That's the one with the...
That's one of Bobby's favorites.
Yeah.
That's one of Bobby's favorites.
There was another one at 4. Outer Limits, The Zanti Misfits came in at number 4.
Yeah, that's
but
cool.
But not It's a Wonderful Life one, which...
It's a good life.
That's what you were calling it for. Yeah. You were calling it The Wonderful Life, so yeah.
Good
anyway,
life.
We're on a landmark episode today. I've been on a show where Bobby's given something 5 out of 5, so that's made my day. So,
you made
yeah,
it stay,
no.
Bobby.
You made me happy, Bobby. Thank you. Season 5, episode 105, October 11, 1963. The day after the first James Bond film appeared in the UK. Just put it in some sort of perspective. Dr. No, I think just a dad here in the UK. I mean, William Shatner is pretty good in here. I mean, he's actually acting rather than overacting as well, as I should
Other
say.
Times, I just phoned
Dave,
it in,
Dave. Dave, you said season 5, 105. Season 5, 123.
Yeah. I think he said Gremlins in the Sky. It might have been this. I better stop it before he starts singing. It's one of those talking records that he did, like with Mr. Tambourine Man. Shouldn't be there. I must admit, didn't he look young? I'm surprised Lynn didn't drool a little bit because he looked a very handsome man here, didn't he? They said he's a 37-year-old man.
I like him, but he's not. He doesn't do anything for me.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, 37's not old by any means. I think he was actually 31 or 2 acting this with the lady who played his wife, Christine White. I think she was about 37, so I think they did it for that reason. I'm assuming that they did this on board one of these sort of training aeroplanes, you know, where they train the ground crew. Looked more like that to me than an actual set they'd built. But if they did go to all that trouble and expense of building a set, maybe there just wasn't any money left over, and that was the real weak point of this, the actual creature itself. And it was fairly well lit. I rewatched it again today, and I had forgotten how much they lit it up, because I seem to remember when I'd watched it before that, you know, like as Bobby says, he opens these curtains and it's there. I thought it just happened like with a flash of lightning at the same moment. If you go to the Nightmare at 20,000 Feet wiki page, you can quite clearly see this gremlin's face. And I was thinking, they must have just captured the still where the lightning strikes. But actually, they didn't try to hide it. I think it would have been better even less lit than that. It looked far too big. I think something like the Gremlins in the modern film, something more, I don't know, more bat-like creature would have worked far, far better. But nonetheless, it maintained the thing. Again, it was a turboprop. It wasn't a plane that would have flown. And fancy, there we are, Rick Wall. It was a nightmare at 20,000 feet, so they were flying at 20,000 feet. I'm assuming what happened is a plane like that would normally fly more like 30,000 feet. They probably, it would have been nice if the pilot had said, you know, we're dropping down, losing altitude to fly under the storm. Because normally they don't fly low because it uses more petrol. Thicker the air, the more aviation fuel that they use. So I think if he sent his wife away, there was certainly decompression as he opened that window and he was sucked out. He had the sense to put his seatbelt on, as it were. But I don't think it would have been the catastrophic thing like in the Goldfinger. I mean, that was a little jet plane in Goldfinger, wasn't it, where he had a sort of slurping where he was almost sucked out of the aeroplane window. Ooh, that was nasty. The only thing other than that is I'm not too sure about the ending, and I think I agree with Bobby on this one. Should they have actually, first of all, should there have been damage on the wing? In other words, they could have done a couple of things there. They could have had him saying, you know, they'll know soon enough, a little bit like if you remember the very famous science fiction one with the pods, you know, where people are being replaced by pods.
Invasion
of the Body Snatchers, thank you. And his face comes straight up to the screen, you know, at the end, you know, we're all in danger now, we're all, you know, they're coming.
Yeah, Kevin McCartney,
like,
yeah.
If they'd have had the William Shatner character, you know, zoom straight into his face, you know, going berserk about it, and then pan to the wing, and absolutely no sign of damage at all. Because they did have the damage, and again, it could be explained away by the fact that he did fire those shots. But it would have been nice in another way, where if they'd had if they wanted to go the way they did, you know, having them all consoling the wife and it's back to the sanitarium and all that, and just at the same time in the background, you know, the ground crew are climbing up a ladder just to sort of, you know, refill the wings with fuel or whatever it is they do. And just as the ambulance driving away with him shouting, I'm not mad, I'm not mad, they suddenly say, you know, Captain, come and look at this. So I think a little bit more thought could have gone into that final scene. That just could have perhaps tweaked it. I mean, I think I'm going to be I'm being cheerless here. I'm probably going to give it 4.5 just for the for the monster. But I did enjoy it. It is a good one. Absolutely couldn't have been a longer episode than that, though. I think, they stretched it out to, a good time, nearly 25 minutes. This would have crashed and burned. Not the plane. The episode would have crashed and burned. Just tried to a little longer. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. William Shatner was watchable in this. And I actually believed that he was a character. I wasn't just watching William Shatner be himself, you know, so...
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, and he was really good.
The scene with the gun was a bit laughable as well. I mean, it was... Mm-hmm. There was
I know.
I mean, he pantomimed that bit, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I I'm just being mean, holding back half a point, 4.5.
Ah, that's okay. That's a good score. All right. Thanks, Dave. Okay, Louis.
Okay, well, first, in defense of William Shatner, I've always, I like William Shatner. I'm a big Star Trek fan, so I'll always be a fan of his. And in defense of his acting, you know, I think he was trained as a theatrical actor. You know, he was never really method, so I think he's always had a bit of theatricality, even in all of his television performances and movie performances, and that's why he comes off a little over the top. I don't think he's ever really done method or, you know, I remember hearing a commentary for Star Trek II where there was a line he was supposed to deliver. It was like, here it comes. But he kept delivering it like, you know, it's like a twinkle in his eyes. Here it comes. And the director had to have him do take after take after take until he delivered it kind of blandly the way the director wanted. So I'm just defending him on that. I love the episode.
Well, I think he has a good sense of humor about it too, because
yeah.
he knows people cut him up about that, and
yeah,
he actually said he's sorry about it.
He says, "No one does anyone complain about Jimmy Stewart?" Because he goes, "Well, now look here, Mary, you know."
And he,
you know,
and
like,
Shatner actually has spoofed himself on that. On episodes. So you've got a good sense of humor about it.
But, you know, I actually like this episode a lot. I give it a 5. You know, I think it's more or less believable. I agree with Rick to a certain degree that maybe part of his therapy was actually getting up on a plane. So maybe that's why they allowed him on the plane. I think the reason he sat by the window with the emergency seat was more out of pride than fear. He didn't want to look like he was nervous. He wanted to convince his wife and himself that he had gotten over whatever had caused his mental breakdown on the plane in the first place. So I can see all those things. Admittedly, you're right about the gremlin disappearing and appearing whenever he asked people to come to the window. It kind of reminded me of the... You remember the Warner Brothers frog? Remember that cartoon?
Oh, yeah.
With the singing frog and the guy trying to throw him off to other people.
Hello, my darling. Hello, my ragtime.
Yeah.
God, I haven't thought about that in years.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You know, that's a little comical. That's a little, yeah, that's a contrived occurrence that happens in the episode. But you know what?
They did that in Spaceballs.
That was great. Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. They did that in Spaceballs. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
I think this is like one of the episodes that kind of proves that the half-hour element or half-hour format works. Because, you know, I saw it recently, and for some reason I forgot that the gremlin showed up on the second time he looks out the window. I thought there was a bit more of a build-up. So, you know, he looks out the window, he sees this thing, and he's not even sure himself of what he's seen. So, you know, but then the fact that on the second time when he opens up that, when he pulls those curtains back and the gremlin's right there in his face, really delivers a punch. It just, you know, it lets us know right now and then that this is actually something real in his, you know, in his thoughts. And even I think it is real. I think the gremlin is real. I think there was some sort of creature out there on the wing. I don't think this was a figment of his imagination.
Yeah, it's life, Jim, but not as we know it.
But, you know, so, and, you know, I think it worked well. I don't mind the outfit as well. I think I'm really impressed with the way the creature was lifted off and landed on the wing of that plane. They really made it seem like it was floating down there and floating off. I think that's part of the reason why they might have had that suit. I think, you know, I thought I could have seen one frame where you could actually see a wire pulling on the suit. I'm not exactly sure if that was true or not. But I really liked
that. Yeah, I bet you that man enjoyed that being pulled like that in that harness.
you said you didn't know if what was true, that he was being pulled up?
No,
it's when he flies backwards, so he's going to grab the
tail.
Yeah, he's going to grab the tail wing or something.
Yeah,
they pull him backwards. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I like that effect of him, the gremlin, landing on and off the plane. And, you know, all the other issues are, you know, I mean, this is basically a man who's just, you know, I think the point of the episode is that here's a man who's, he knows he has all of this against him. People are going to think he's crazy. I mean, it's kind of funny when the pilot first tells him that, yes, we know about him. He goes, oh, you do? And then he realizes that he's being patronized. He goes, forget it.
Yeah.
I understand. I know exactly what you're doing.
And the look on his face, and look at his wife like, you bitch. He told me you were going to go tell him.
you never told him anything. But I think that's where the episode gets its strength. It's basically this character who knows, will he doubt himself or will he believe in what he's seen? Will he agree with the crowd or will he just go out on his own and risk his life and maybe even everyone else's life to face what he's seen, you know? So, in that matter, you know, I really like the episode. I think it works well, and also for the ending, this is the first time I ever noticed it in the number of times I've watched it, but when William Shatner is being brought out of the plane on the stretcher, I noticed he craned his neck back as if he was looking towards the wing and as if he had noticed something on the wing, like he had seen the damage.
Yeah.
And I'd never noticed that
before.
Looked
up. Yeah.
Yeah, he looks up. I don't think he like. I think that's why he goes. You know, that's why I think he has this little bit of confidence that he'll be vindicated later, because he's noticed the damage that maybe no one else has. I think the effect was better done in the movie, because in the movie, because in the television episode, it just looks like there's wires hanging out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where in the movie, we actually see like the panel as if it had been bent outward.
Oh yeah, it was completely damaged. Yeah.
Yeah, and it looks like it was actually being pulled and bent. So that one, you can see where that probably would have been a more effective proof that he had seen something that was doing something that wasn't just a typical engine failure or just something else. You know, I think he is going to go to the sanitarium, but I think they'll let him out on, like, mitigating circumstances. You know, oh, there was something happening out on that plane, and he did see it. And considering his former fears or whatever, I guess it justified. You know, I think he probably just spent a month or so. Maybe
good
behavior.
Let him out on good behavior.
Yeah. But, I really enjoyed this episode. I really enjoyed this episode from beginning to end. And, you know, I give it 5 stars.
All right. Awesome. Okay. And we also have guest 10 here who, he said he didn't know about this room and he's seen all the episodes. And I told him to come see us every 2 weeks. So I do hope you come and see us. Guest 10, if you have a second and you want to let us know your rating for this episode, that would be great. I'm assuming either you'll raise a 4 or 5, right? I'm glad to have you here. And
I was going to say, I'm reading the chat here, and I agree with Dave. It would have been interesting instead of it being a gremlin, it being a gargoyle. And
I love gargoyles. Oh, they are so scary.
He mentioned Bach from Doctor Who, which was in the story The Demons, which is a John Pertwee Third Doctor story. Oh, and by the way, some news too for people who are in the new series coming out called Gothic, which is supposed to be the prequel, which is supposed to be what Bruce Wayne as a child growing up was, kind of like a Smallville situation.
Yeah.
But John Pertwee's son, Sean Pertwee, plays Alfred Pennyworth in that series. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is.
Now, let me answer this. Was Bach a gargoyle?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it would be very suitable because the Brigadier says at one point, chap with wings, 5 rounds rapid. Well, this could have been chap on the wings, 5 rounds rapid.
Oh, see, I love gargoyles. I really do. I think they are scary, but they're also kind of cute in a way. So I really do I like gargoyles.
But you know what?
I love them.
Maybe gremlins are related to gargoyles, because if you remember Gremlins 2, that gremlin that grew the wings and ended up being cemented on the building.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I love gargoyles. Yeah, I think they are related somehow. Gargoyles are very cool. Oh, and guest number 10, he originally gave it a 5, but now he's given it a 4, which is still an awesome rating. So I thank you for that. And I hope you're going to come back and visit us again. And we're going to be here in 2 weeks. Not such a classic episode. It's called A Kind of a Stopwatch. A Kind of a Stopwatch. And that is going to be 2 weeks from now. And let me just check the date on that.
Can I give you one last? Does anyone remember the Bugs Bunny cartoon with the gremlin?
No.
Remember there was a,
he
thought there was a gremlin on the plane, and it was this little tiny little creature that had like the, you know, those pilot helmets with the goggles.
Yeah,
don't you remember? Then
the
plane starts crashing and Bugs Bunny screaming and howling and generally overacting more than William Shatner, and at the end the plane basically stops before it hits the ground.
Oh,
we find out that the plane ran out of gas.
Oh, wow.
This is a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Yeah, it was actually a funny one.
Aww,
and then Bugs goes, air brakes, or hair brakes, or something like that. Yeah.
I thought it was that it ran out of gas before it hit the ground. Wasn't that it? I can't remember.
Brakes, right? Air brakes or hair brakes or something like that.
Oh, God, I would love to see that. I wonder if YouTube has it.
They might. You'd have to find it. There's a lot of copyright stuff, but you might find it, yeah.
Awesome. All right, well, cool.
Of course,
I
always like Marvin the Martian, Let's go back to Earth.
Actually, I think that's what the gremlin looks like. Oh, no. I forgot what the gremlin looked like. It was just a tiny little green guy with the bombardier helmet or whatever it was.
Oh, my God. All right, guys, 2 weeks from now. On
okay.
the 12th. We're talking the 12th of April now. The 12th of April. Okay. And that will be a kind of a stopwatch. Not
and I will have a Friday the 13th connection to this one. Find out.
Oh, yeah. We're all.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty awesome.
The
okay.
series, I mean. Yeah. Not the movie.
Yeah, Friday the 13th.
Oh, I do remember that episode.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So cool. So, everybody, 2 weeks from now, April 12th, a kind of a stopwatch. And that is April 12th, not the 12th of never. That is the 12th of April. And we will see you all there. That is Dave and Guest 10 and Felix and Rick. Rick better be there. And Robert and Louie and everybody. I want to see you all there, okay? Y'all come back now, you hear?
Oh,
all
geez,
right.
Man. All right.
Y'all come back now.
Do 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 do.
Take your shoes off, sit a spell. Y'all come back now, you hear? All right, see y'all then. Bye
bye,
everybody.
Bye.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Next time on The Twilight Zone, we probe into the element of time and present a very oddball opus entitled A Kind of a Stopwatch. We tell the story of a man, a stopwatch, and an incredible deviation from the norm. Said norm being the usual 24-hour day. Said deviation involving what happens when a stopwatch is pushed and everything stops, not just time. To titillate and intrigue, a kind of a stopwatch, next on Twilight Zone.